Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. I have to remind myself every single time. It's just been a while since I've done these Geekscape lives. We've had some pre-recorded episodes recently, some pretty awesome ones. Thanks for rolling up on that Joe Dante interview. I couldn't believe that. The day before, they solicited the director of Gremlins to me, and I said, is this real? Like, this, you're not pulling my leg? Y'all heard it. Joe Dante came on the show. So did Neil LaBute. We had some really great interviews, and those things happen or don't. So I don't really tell y'all in advance who we got unless it's pre-recorded. So surprise, we had some pretty awesome Geekscapes. The numbers have been great. And we added some Geekscapes along the way. If this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in. We're going to talk some pop culture, especially this episode. I've gathered a round table of some of my best friends to help walk me through some of the D23 announcements that came out of this past weekend. There was a lot of Marvel. There was a lot of Star Wars. There was Indiana Jones 5. I'm super excited about the new Willow series. And there's a ton of additions to both the parks and all the other Disney stuff that we've got coming down the pipe for the next, I don't know, million years, because it's Disney. I can't wade through all of it on my own. I can't interpret that stuff. I can't bring that to you just with my knowledge. No, my brain will crack. It's not that big. So I've got a little round table here of my friends to walk through all those announcements, see what they think, see what that means for things like the future of the MCU or racism in America, as it comes to be, I guess, when you have one slight change to the Little Mermaid. Yeah, that was a shameful experience, making one little change to a made-up children's character. And suddenly, they all come out of the woodwork. But we knew that already, because we've all been watching Rings of Power and everything else. So we'll talk about it. We will talk about it on a brand new Geekscape. Thanks for joining me here. And if you're enjoying your Geekscape, go ahead and hit that share button. Get some of your friends in here to join in with us. But for now, let's just start the episode, shall we? All right, as promised in the theme song, here's Jonathan to start the show, and let's start the show. We got a lot of D23 Expo to talk about, so let's start it up. This is, again, the D23 2022 wrap-up roundtable. So let's get our roundtable out here to start talking some of the Pixars and the Star Wars and the Marvels and the theme parks and this and that. I'm going to start with two friends of mine who are actually on the ground there in Anaheim. Our own nerd war correspondents, Ashley and Jason. How are you guys?
Hello, welcome to J23. We have all the best announcements here. I'm Jason. This is Ashley, of course. And we're going to tell you all about our theme parks and everything like that. All the Star Wars movies that we own, everything like that. It's going to be an exciting time, Jonathan.
I thought I was brought here as the Canadian to talk about the death of the Queen.
We're also going to talk about that as well. That's what this is about, Jonathan, right? You reached out to us. You said you wanted to talk about my personal theme park and the death of the Queen, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, here to help out with some of the jokes is Katie.
I am dying over here.
Wow. Wow.
I was loving it. No.
Absolutely no yes and from Jonathan.
I really wanted a yes
and. My yes and was yes and help, Katie, help.
He was drowning out there and he was giving you gold. I was like, fuck yeah, let's talk about the rides, let's talk about the Queen, but via Canada.
I'm messing with y'all. I just got to get y'all in here to start talking about this stuff, and so I'm not going to delay any more for any of that chit-chat banter. People don't listen to Geekscape for the humor. They wouldn't have been listening because it's me. All right, speaking of funny, here's Christian. Here. Christian just celebrated his 500th episode of the Blattcast.
And I brought along, I don't know if I provide enough funny in 500 episodes, so I did a big two-hour episode with John Lovitz, and he brought the funny, so I didn't need to.
Okay. Well, we got one more person to add to this little round table. My own ward right here, Garrett Briones.
So I can exclusively break here through the rumor mill at J23. They announced they're going to, in the Hall of Presidents, put an animatronic of the Queen, the first ever non-president, into the Hall of Presidents. I'm breaking it right here. I got the scoop.
We were trying to save that, but I appreciate you bringing that up. And I just want to say
London dropped the ball, as he often does. So yes. Garrett's Cape is the Geekscape once again.
Guys, I'm okay with this episode just becoming a roast. Fuck it.
Garrett, you're one of our best social media influencers, and I just want to say we're gonna make you an exclusive J23 pin.
Heck,
we're gonna send
it to you
in the mail. Nobody else in the show gets it. Only you, Garrett. Yes.
I saw a picture of one of those on social media. It was being held up by a guy in a red. Never mind.
Oh,
Jason. Okay, that's an inside
red
joke,
shirt, right? Red shirt.
Red shirt. Okay, here we go. We got the comments here in the section. Maybe we can start with that. Let's see. Jim Pagnarelli says, the only story out of D23 is the criminal neglect they display by not giving us a Madison series. That's with a Y, not where you think. Yeah, we like that Madison from the She-Hulk. That was really funny. Props to her. She's from Groundlings, or where'd she come out of, that girl?
Yeah, that's Patty Guggenheim. She's been doing that character at the Groundlings for a couple of minutes, and it's just one... Love that show so hard. Love seeing Patty Guggenheim come in and just do her comedy thing. All the female comedy people that have gone through that show is making my mind go poof. But Patty Guggenheim, look her up. She's hysterical, great character. She's awesome.
But I don't know if she's going to be in the larger MCU. But I don't know. The feedback has been so huge on that episode and her appearance that I think she may have just mainstreamed herself into the MCU. That happens sometimes. All right. Here we go. A little more Queen talk, because Jason and Ashley demanded.
Beyonce?
The Queen showing up in the Hall of Presidents feels like our universe's equivalent of someone saying, Hail Hydra. No, you stay out of this, Jim. That is rude. Give some respect to the Queen.
One of them is related to actual Nazis. One of them is based on Nazis. Who's to tell which one?
On my Twitter profile, it says Mexican-American with a British last name, and somebody goes, oh, so you're the colonials and the colonized. Oh, you're the colonizer and the colonized. I was like, okay, yeah, no, that's kind of how kids are born. All right.
Beautiful heritages.
Here we go. Where do y'all want to start with this D23 thing? I mean, obviously, as a Marvel head, I want to talk Marvel, but I think that Disney made us wait, so why don't we talk a little bit of Star Wars? Y'all are big Star Wars fans. That's pretty exciting news. This Andor series, we got a 5-minute clip they talked about. Did anybody see the 5-minute clip? It's not online, but we did get a brand new trailer. We also got some Ahsoka artwork. We also got a follow-up season to, what is it? What's it called?
Bad
the Bad Batch. I wanted to call it the Dirty Dozen. The Bad Batch. There's
wrong,
a ton
though.
Of Star Wars news. And we got that Mandalorian Season 3 trailer. Anything surprising out of any of the Star Wars stuff? Or is this stuff that was kind of announced?
Lee Jung-jae is going to be in The Acolyte. And I'm very excited about that. He's from Squid Games. Wonderful.
Going
to
win an Emmy tonight.
He may have already won it. We don't know.
Right. The Emmys are going on while we're recording these.
Or this just might be an eternal reminder of his failure. Thanks a lot, Ashley.
he won the only contest that he needed to. He was able to not only win, you know, Tug of War, and then and then actually win the Squid Game at the end without having to commit murder. So good for him, you know. Even if he doesn't get a little trophy. He got all that money that he didn't touch for an entire year.
I mean, I don't know. For me, I would love to hear everybody else's opinions of this, but I mean, a lot of D23, especially the media stuff, was kind of just the standard stuff that I thought we all thought they were going to announce. The most surprising thing specifically towards Star Wars, I would say, is that I guess Jude Law is going to be in Star Wars now.
Well, he's also in Peter Pan and Wendy. So
and he's in Marvel already,
sort
too.
Sort of that's in, right. I guess, the Disney Studios umbrella. Yeah. So maybe this was the final frontier for him to break into.
Yeah, Jude Law is racking up like the hat trick, the Disney hat trick. Like, you got to be in a Pixar or you got to be in a Disney thing. you know, I guess he's playing Captain Hook in the Peter and Wendy project that they've got. You got to be in a Star Wars. We saw him in Captain Marvel, and now he's in a Star Wars. He can, he's got it. He can buy all the houses he wants.
If you're to put him and Ming-Na Wen in the same project at some point, that's going to, you know, really just be
the universe will explode into a million pieces.
If Ming-Na Wen is in a film where she beats the ever-loving snot out of Jude Law, I'll buy five tickets. I'm saying.
If she's in a TMZ video where she beats the snot out of Jude Law,
I will still buy five tickets. Yes.
Exactly.
I think we pretty much want Ming-Na Wen in anything. Mm-hmm. You know,
sign me up.
A couple of the announcements didn't come out with an immediate racial outcry, but it was clear that Disney's doing like a pretty damn good job of making their castings a lot more representational of the American and global demographics going on. Like, we're seeing a lot more diverse directors and creators and writers, and then we're also seeing that cast represented in front of the camera. What did y'all think of we just mentioned one, but what do y'all think of having people like Anthony Ramos join the MCU? I mean, that was the one that specifically I was really excited about, was having him play the Hood, because as a character I'm not necessarily interested in. He's in Ironheart, which I think is like a great idea for a character. On the page, Ironheart has been like, okay, someone else has to wear armor. It can't just be Pepper and Rhodey. And Tony, let's give ourselves a young Avengers kind of, yeah, let's give ourselves like a young Avengers type Iron Man character. I think Riri Williams is a great idea for that. I don't know if her stories in the comics have ever been amazing, but I guess we'll see her really soon in Wakanda Forever. Thoughts on some of those castings? Like, the Anthony Ramos thing got me super excited about a character that I thought was just like a kind of a lame duck bad guy in underneath the Kingpin's world, you know. Like, it seems like every 5 years in Daredevil or any of the Marvel books, Kingpin gets blind, or Kingpin gets injured, or Kingpin kind of gets killed, or Kingpin becomes
mayor of New York City,
right? Or gets buried under a building, yeah. and there's a vacuum, there's a power vacuum in Manhattan, and the Hood is one of those characters that comes out of it. But he does have special powers. Garrett, what are the Hood's special powers, and do you think they're going to end up being in Ironheart?
Well,
he's like the cape, right? That's who
he wishes. Jeez. You know, my biggest exposure to the Hood was when he had one of the Infinity Stones. I think, suffers from something many a character has suffered from, which is, you're the guy now. You are Bendis, make him the next guy. He's the guy. And then most of his stories is he wasn't the guy. You're not that guy, pal. You're not that guy. But as you said, I am excited to see him translated to the big screen, especially with Riri Williams, especially because when you look at like a character like Miles Morales, who already was great on the page and I think has gotten even better in other mediums. So I think both the Hood and Riri both have an opportunity, now that we have seen what works for them in the comics, to kind of say, okay, well, we're going to take what works and we're going to make our own little tweaks, little adjustments, try and make them someone that has a little more of an impact than they may have had on the printed page.
Yeah, I think Echo is a character that also falls under that. Echo is like a pretty awesome character to be introduced in that second storyline in Daredevil. Back when Daredevil got that late 90s, early 2000s revamp, and Echo was a natural. I love the David Mack artwork and all of those covers. And seeing Echo in the whole Kingpin storyline put into the Hawkeye series, I'm actually really excited for the Echo series. But it kind of feels like all of those street level could have been Netflix Marvel series are just going to be born again with 18 episodes of Daredevil Born Again. And supposedly they're not just going to retell the Born Again story. Supposedly they're not going to do a continuation of the Netflix Daredevil storyline.
Probably best.
It's going to feel like a soft reboot. I think and I think with 18 episodes, Ashley, you're saying there's too many episodes. I would say that they're just going to use those 18 episodes to reintroduce almost the entirety of the Netflix lineup.
Well, one, Daredevil for me is neither here nor there. Like, if Charlie Cox continues to take his shirt off on camera, like, bonus for me. I have zero investment in the character. I don't care that we're completely rebooting him. I don't know how I think about it.
So, excuse me while I have a heart attack.
Oh, no. No, Jason, this can all be fixed. take your shirt off.
A J23 exclusive right now.
Not as good as Charlie Cox's.
J23, let's one up it with a J6.
It's funny, it's funny. We've been having this conversation off the pod a lot because I think 18 episodes is perfect because to me that says that Disney Plus. Well, that's the thing, right? We used to get 26 episode seasons every single year. And now we've gone to this weird streaming model where you're lucky if you get 8. So I kind of like that Disney Plus is like, we are confident in this character. Mm-hmm. We are confident in the direction. Screw this 6-episode season. Here is a normal television season. Here is 18 episodes. And to your early point, Jonathan, I kind of think, I think it will be a little bit of a soft reboot, but I think they're going to probably play around with the idea of like, well, all that stuff happened. We're just not going to mention it that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can change the typhoid, Mary. Jim Paganelli says, if they do Born Again, do we get Nuke? We got a version of Nuke, actually.
We did.
Yeah. In those Netflix series. If you look up, like, we had a version of Bullseye that was okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really the Bullseye that we know. We did get a version of Nuke, I think, in the Jessica Jones series.
Yep.
He was, like, an antagonist. So I think there's a chance to bring all those characters in and soft reboot all of them. The question is with... quote unquote woke Disney, are they going to go as so far as to like get John Bernthal back as the Punisher? Because I thought that first season of Punisher was actually really, really good.
I agree. I think we could just never do the Punisher again and we'd all be better for it. That's my hottest of takes.
I kind of agree with that too. And I did love that first season.
But he's great in that part.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna have to respectfully disagree with both.
This
of
is the internet.
I can always use more Punisher. I love the Punisher. And I thought that the second season was actually better. And, I wanted more of that character. The problem with that character is I think he needs less than 13 episodes. I think the Punisher would be well suited for movies because if you have him, you know, like Jason from Friday the 13th, just how many times he should die. And you're like, yeah, but we got 6 more episodes, so he's not dead. I hope that they find, and I think that honestly, that character is more suited to movies anyway. I think he always was. And it's like, if they're going to keep making Deadpool movies, they should make Punisher movies. And then you don't have to feel like you need to see them, but I'll be there. And I think John Bernthal was perfect in the part. Although it's not really stiff competition. All you had to do was be better than Thomas Jane, Dolph Lundgren, and the other guy.
Hey, don't go besmirching the Thomas Jane Punisher movie. Nope. I'll fight.
But I would say he was better than Thomas Jane. But that was the good one.
He was. But
when do you think they'll bring back Howard Saint, John Travolta, back to the MCU? That's the one that we all want.
I don't know if I'm going to defend that.
I'm bringing back Howard Saint right now.
You take my money, take my whole bank account. I'll watch 16 episodes of Howard Saint on Disney Plus.
I mean, I would give John Travolta a blank check. Who do you want to play? Professor X? Okay, besides that, who else would you like?
No, he's got the hair for it.
I know, that's the problem. He's got the hair for it now.
Little do you know, he loves Kitty Pryde. That's who he's coming. He wants Lockjaw and everything.
That's a whole totally different type of Grease Lightning.
Yeah. One thing that we didn't get were those X-Men announcements. Like you mentioned Kitty Pryde, we don't get the X-Men announcements, but then when you look at you're going to end up getting like Sombra in the Captain America 4 New World Order storyline. She's the Israeli superhero and she's a mutant. So are we not going to get an X-Men announcement until maybe one of those gaps in Phase 6, or maybe that's a Phase 7 move? But ultimately, we're going to be chock full of like lesser known mutants by that point.
Sure. The interesting thing that I thought was weird is that they did of course officially announce Fantastic Four, but not who's in it. And I was just like, I feel like that's key, and I don't know if they're waiting for something or maybe something's going with that. I don't know, but it just feels like that's a key connection as well in introducing any X-Men in the series.
If y'all listen to the episodes at Comic-Con, we had the writers of Morbius on, and they're the nicest guys. I think Katie, you met them at the booth.
I did.
They're awesome. And what they said about, especially about Morbius, is like, or any movie, really, we've seen this happen a million times, especially in big studio films and studio projects, is that when the director comes on, whatever script they have has to go back through the director's lens, and the director has to kind of put their stamp on it with the studio and rework it. And I think that in announcing a brand new director for Fantastic Four, because obviously John Watts has moved on to do other things for whatever reasons, I think he's going to have some say in the cast, right? Like, nobody really talks about the Nicole Perlman version of Guardians of the Galaxy, where Star-Lord's trying to find his father and this and that. That was the original storyline, supposedly, to the Nicole Perlman script. But it's clear that when James Gunn came in, he did his own Guardians of the Galaxy. He's got his signature crazy flavor to it, and it really worked for that franchise. Here, we don't necessarily know the director too much more. We've seen his work in, like, WandaVision or here and there in the MCU or in different projects. But here's is this a director that can kind of do the studios what the studio wants? Or is this somebody who's going to, again, put a stamp on stuff, get his cast, get his storyline, and really have, like, a signature feel to the Fantastic Four?
And what's the name of the director?
Matt Shankman. Two things that I wanted to say. Jonathan, first, you're trying to convince me that people,
Shankman,
multiple people, wrote Morbius, and I'm just going to call you out and bullshit on that. There's no way that's possible. No one wrote that. That was Jared Leto's fever dream, and then they put it in theaters. But
I go back and listen to those episodes, and they're not going to disagree with you.
I think that you're 100% right. The reason why we didn't get the cast for Fantastic Four, much to the disappointment of Twitter, which
Twitter was hilarious. Twitter was amazing during
D23. I think it's because they don't have it. They have some ideas. They have people that, you know, maybe they've got, even if they've got three of them cast, they're like, yeah, but we're still looking for Ben Grimm or whatever. And it's like, yeah, there's no rush. That movie's not coming out that soon, you know?
It isn't.
I'll walk out on stage next year at D23, you know?
Sure. Well, I'm excited for that, but I'm just like, feel like there's something going on in, I feel like, the background with Fantastic Four that's just like not quite linchpinning.
I think they want to get it right.
I think they love.
Just really want to get it right.
You know, the weirdest thing about this is that it's so funny, this Fantastic Four being blown up on Twitter, is that D23 is this weird thing where, you know, they made a lot of announcements, and a lot of them were really like, if these announcements had been made in 2015, everybody would have exploded. They'd be like, a Thunderbolts movie. Oh my God. The Hood. Oh my God. And then now we're in this world of 2022. And just because they don't announce a Fantastic Four, everybody's like, oh, garbage, pure garbage.
And does D23 suffer from coming on the tail end of Comic-Con just 2 months ago, where we got this whole announcement and people, it's like, we haven't even gotten one thing out of phase five yet, and y'all are already hungry for those gaps in phase six and being like, well, what's going on with the Fantastic Four? It's like, oh, that's phase six. I think phase five still looks really great, and we're not done with phase four. And speaking of phase six, in the talk of phase four, there's that rumor that the tag on Wakanda Forever is Latveria.
Yeah, I've heard that rumor from a couple of people too, that Doom is in Black Panther 2.
And he's played this by John Travolta.
Hey!
Bring it all back. You heard it here. J23.
Just Doom walking down explosive. He's walking down a hallway of Doomstat, just doing like his little dance.
He's got the two slices of pizza folded over while he walks down the sidewalk. Yes.
If Wakanda Forever is this kind of establishment of these international wars between Atlantis, Wakanda, and maybe it was manipulated by the big bad you get in the end credits, Latveria, and then we have these international conflicts, I think that does start to lead into the international conflicts you started to see kind of outlined in phase five, especially with things like Secret Invasion, which kind of just feels like a spycraft kind of show, which is cool. But then you also go into Captain America 4, you know, which is clearly political. And then Thunderbolts, clearly political, with a whole team made up of failed super soldier programs. We're going to get a lot of politics. There's going to be a lot of criticism of woke Disney coming down the pipe because phase five is chock full of political stuff in it. Am I wrong in that, or?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it's interesting because, like, you know, everybody is saying, like, well, how do you do these phases that's different from just building up to Thanos, right? And they're going to Kang, and it looks like they're doing this multiverse thing. And it looks like in the idea of building their new Avengers, it looks like we're going to have our characters be further apart, even, you know, in their ideals. And then through the course of some phase, or maybe even through the course of maybe the Fantastic Four unites them all, that's how we're going to get our new Avengers, which is interesting to me because it's a completely different way to build an Avengers team than what we saw in phase one, phase two, phase... I don't know the phases anymore.
Phased out.
Looking at the criticism of Thunderbolts, which is... I mean, this criticism of Thunderbolts is really like, oh, Zemo's not on the team, Abomination's not on the team. Okay, listen, like, that is the comic. And all that Zemo stuff was the comic, and I think that stuff's great, and it doesn't negate the fact... Zemo might still be in the Thunderbolts somewhere. The Thunderbolts might be about going after... Zemo. The one thing that's not present and wasn't announced in the cast of Captain America 4, like, that is a Falcon Cap story, mm-hmm. right? We don't have Bucky in that, supposedly, but we got Bucky 2 months later in a Thunderbolts movie. Like, to add credence to what Jason's saying, it feels like Secret Invasion is going to happen. It's going to put the entire MCU on a bit of a fault line that's pretty rocky and shifting and collapsing. Then you've got Cap, who's inheriting the mantle. Maybe that doesn't work because we got the leader in that story, and the leader is pretty, you know, he's a brainiac, like, no pun intended, like, he's actually super smart. And it's called the New World Order, so we're gonna have obviously the political machinations. I feel like Sam is gonna fail in that movie. He's gonna have an emotional victory, but I think that people are ultimately at the end of that movie gonna say, you are not Steve Rogers, and that is gonna be the impetus for putting together the failed super soldier programs as the Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts definitely are not Steve Rogers. And we're going to spend some of the end of phase five going into phase six as a redemptive story for Falcon Cap. And then you end up with this big Kang issue where he's a sci-fi villain. And ultimately, when we loved as kids reading about the Infinity Gauntlet and seeing Cap stand up to Thanos, I think we might be getting that with Falcon, Cap, and Kang, where it's a human kind of out of his power set standing up to somebody who can blink and erase him, and he wins. Do y'all see that, or is that just me being a fanboy?
I think you're I think you're giving them entirely too much credit. I think what we are seeing is we have two actors who both have a contract that said they're going to lead Avengers teams, and so Sam is going to lead the Avengers, and Bucky's going to lead the Thunderbolts, or whatever they're going to call that team, because they have contracts.
Suicide Squad light.
They got it. They got to eat their Bucky and have it too. Like, Jonathan, I want it to be what you're saying, but I think you were giving Marvel Studios and Disney entirely too much credit. There is too much thought in that for that to be true.
But Garrett, you got excited for what I was saying, didn't you? Sam step up to Kang, and I mean, obviously, like, yes. Doom's going to play into that. Reed's going to play into that whole.
But Garrett, if I may, yes. How much more excited would you be if Sam stood up to Howard Saint?
Oh, well, I mean, first off,
I just love that Howard Saint's like, I wanted to walk out of that movie many times, especially when Howard Saint said $1 million to the man who could find me the Punisher, when his bad guys had been to the Punisher's house no less than like three times. In that
Here's
movie
how geeky that we are. The fact that anybody on this podcast knows the name Howard Saint.
That movie is bad.
You know, speaking of New World Order, Kevin Nash plays the Russian in that movie, who gets his booty whooped by Tom Jane. But you know, to speak to the Thunderbolts, I have two things. One, I'm excited for it because I was texting London and Christian about this, where I was saying I like, you know, one of my favorite corners of the MCU, and has always been one of my favorite corners of the comics, is the super soldier espionage corner, you know, the Ed Brubaker Cap. I'm a big fan of the Ultimates 1 and 2, specifically the Ultimates 1 and 2. There's no Ultimates 3 by Jeff Loeb.
Correct.
And I think Thunderbolts, for me, it does feel like a culmination. It feels, London and I was even saying, it feels like a sequel to Black Widow. It also feels like a sequel to Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So I'm really, that's what excites me, that it is all these ragtag misfits who are all some variation of a super soldier, kind of being like, hey, you're all we got. We can't get the beautiful blonde man with the hammer anymore. So you're what we got. And we're going to have, you know, Bucky lead you. And it's like, does he really want to be a leader? If that's even what they go with. And the second thing is, people are too picky choosy. Like, oh, Zemo's not in there. Oh, Red Hulk is in there, even though he's only in one version. Like, okay. Also, Captain America wasn't part of the original Avengers. He was part of the original lineup of the Ultimates, which they took a lot from. Yondu wasn't a member of the Guardians in the first Guardians movie. Just stop complaining. Just go outside, touch grass. I mean, like,
there was not a lot of grass touching this weekend.
Like,
there's no grass in Anaheim.
It's just people. Look at the beauty of stories is that you should want to look into the why of stories, not the what. You know, you shouldn't just be caring about the rumors. There's a great article that was written by Richard Newby that was all talking about the rumor mill regarding this weekend, where everyone just want to complain because, oh, Henry Cavill wasn't announced as Hyperion. And I'm like, dude, do you even care about Hyperion? Do you care about the story? No, you don't. You just want to complain that, oh, I didn't get this character I Googled 5 hours ago. It's just, sorry.
If I live 100 more years and they don't make a Squadron Supreme movie, I'll feel like I have lived the fullest life I potentially could. We don't need that. And, you know, the idea, whoever said that, you know, Thunderbolts is really a sequel to Black Widow, it's kind of interesting that that story, you know, set back earlier in the timeline is actually going to have all these ripples going forward. And for me, it's like, oh, look, all the things I liked in that movie, Red Guardian and Yelena. And Jim in the chat is asking if that's the same Taskmaster, which we should have every reason to assume it is. It doesn't have to be, though. That could actually be anybody behind that mask, but I think we're just assuming it's the same character that we met in that movie. And I think it's great. And I think, this is really a way for Bucky to shine in a way he wouldn't if it was like another movie where it was like big name and Bucky. Like, he already had that movie, you know, it was already, you know, and the Winter Soldier. So I think it's great for him that, you know, he'll get this opportunity. And Sam and Bucky are still friends. They're going to hang out. It'll be fine. And what you think you're never going to see Baron Zemo again? So he's not on this team. But you think that they set up, you know, the last time we saw him in Falcon and Winter Soldier. So I'm not worried about where it is. And I learned a long time ago, I said some very stupid things over the last decade plus. I was like, I don't think that Thor is going to be able to work on the screen. I think it's too hard to do. I didn't even know that Captain America was going to work. So a long time ago, I stopped saying that I didn't think things were going to work. Whatever, you know, it doesn't always work the way that I want. But I'm going to go check it out and let me decide, you know, before we get a movie, you know.
I think Marvel knows that stuff. Obviously, they hear a lot of they're listening right now. Hey, Kevin. But they always poke fun at that stuff too. I mean, we just in She-Hulk had the poke fun at the recasting of Bruce. We had John Krasinski kind of just show up in Multiverse of Madness as the fan cast of Reed that everybody was talking about without a guarantee that that's going to be Reed Richards at the end of the day. And who's to say Zemo doesn't just have a cameo in Thunderbolts to basically say, like, hey, fans, like, we get it. We know this was based on the book, but, like, fuck off. We're telling our own stories. Zemo's in this for a split second just to make y'all get thirsty, and then he's out, and here's a joke about a Russian that turns into a giant abomination, and he's not in this movie either. Like, Marvel has a great sense of humor with this stuff, and they know what fans want, and they know also how to satisfy them without delivering exactly what they want. I mean, I'm talking about the general fans, not Ashley. There's no satisfying Ashley on this stuff.
Look, I am a lifelong Robin fan. So the fact that people are getting mad about not seeing someone they learned about 5 seconds ago in a casting announcement, like, that is so cute. Like, yeah, go outside, touch grass, and like tweet me in 35 years when you're still waiting for your favorite character of all time to be treated with the respect he deserves.
I don't think it's going to
I'm living for Ashley and Garrett's like nerd bash, like fake nerd bashing. Like,
look, if you're gonna be nasty to me, at least follow me, Ashley V. Robinson. Then you can tweet me whatever you want if you follow me.
Katie, you were probably touching grass, but I got to tell you, more entertaining than the actual expo and the actual like Marvel press, whatever, it was just reading Twitter. And just at every single one being like, where's the Fantastic Four? And we're to the point where halfway through the Marvel announcements, Kevin Feige came out and goes, oh, by the way, there's just not going to be any Fantastic Four cast announcements today.
They had a sign outside of the event the day of that said there will be no Fantastic Four casting announcement. as you were walking in.
That's amazing.
Marvel publicity was like, stop asking us about the. By the way, Jonathan, all the comic book nerds on this podcast know, like, we're like, if you love the Fantastic Four, you're almost looked down a little bit for the rest of the Marvel fans because the Fantastic Four have a hard time translating into the modern era. And it's so weird because I think this Saturday was the most anyone has ever tweeted about the Fantastic Four.
And Marvel, every time there was a new Fantastic Four movie, people were like, Fantastic Four again? Hasn't this been done? And like now people are like crazy about Fantastic Four.
More people talk about Fantastic Four on this Saturday than like the last decade.
I think the true interest in it all mostly is sort of that thing that like we do trust in the great Marvel and bringing us into these great stories. My favorite thing though is when we have a casting situation, like let's say John Krasinski was confirmed or whatever, that would make a link to that universe that we saw in Multiverse of Madness. And I think that would be something fascinating that like, it's like, okay, well, how are they going to do all that? And I do think there is a big interest in finding out what's going on with the Fantastic Four, just storyline, like who's writing it, who's going to be in it, who's working on it, you know, who's the director. Everything kind of gives us little nuggets of clues to see what's going to happen later. And agreed, everything that's been coming out of D23, I've also really been loving, and I've loved all the different announcements. It's funny because Fantastic Four has this mystery around it for several years now, and everybody is just like, what, who's going to be in it? What's it going to be? How, what's that journey going to take? And what's our end goal here? And
Katie, you named it, like Multiverse of Madness. Everybody's like, oh, it was like a roller coaster ride. There wasn't a whole lot of depth to it, whatever. I had a ton of fun watching that movie. I loved it. I loved having Raimi back on the screen, even if it was Marvel version of Raimi, as some people argued. But it also introduced something that I was really shocked at when that movie came out, and I was like, are they doing this already? And it was the whole incursion storyline that leads to the Secret War and the Kang stuff and the pruning of different timelines and different realities coming into the whole multiverse stuff. The second they said like incursions and that whole idea with the Illuminati talking about incursions, I was like, oh my God, like that is a storyline in the comics. It's like barely 10 years old, and we're already getting it in the MCU, along with what I feel like currently is a late 70s, early 80s era of Marvel Comics also being on the screen. We're getting a nice like pick and choose of good stuff. You're probably gonna see multiple versions of a lot of these characters to satisfy or poke fun at fan castings. You're going to, you know, it's like nothing is out of bounds on this stuff. You might end up seeing a freaking Hyperion fly through a freaking shot, you know, as like an FU fan.
We will.
And that's what's fun about it. And ultimately, like, you know, that stuff is all in the realm of possibility because I went, the thing that made me, the Marvel, you know, announcements made me go, whoa, wait, what? And already is Werewolf by Night. Like, I think we've been wanting Marvel to do low budget indie / experimental type films with their, you know, not everything can be a cinematic blockbuster. Not everything should be a $150 million movie because they also have those horror characters and those B-list characters. And seeing a Werewolf by Night movie with Gael García Bernal, who's a fantastic actor, like already about to come out, and it was made almost in secret. We knew it was happening, but we were like, yeah, we'll see it when we see it. It's almost coming out. And it was a lot of fun. I think they took risks with the style that they presented in that trailer, like making it full B movie, making it super campy, not trying to satisfy the MCU fans, not trying to say, oh, this is a character that's going to get folded in with everybody and it's going to release, you know, it's going to reveal Thanos' third cousin. Like, not doing any of that, but saying, hey, this is just a weird little movie that we're going to make with a Marvel character. And then it's also going to have Man-Thing. It's also going to introduce maybe the whole horror lineup of the 70s. That's a smart move. You know, what did you all think seeing the Werewolf by Night announcement? I know
because I was excited to see that because I felt like, you know, and nobody probably even remembers that they did a Hellstrom series for Hulu. And I wasn't just disappointed in it because it was bad. I was disappointed in it because it was an opportunity to do exactly what you're talking about. But I guess that's why Feige really wanted to kind of, you know, get all the things back on his table, because you can't really do that anytime soon. And I really thought that that's what that show was going to be. I'm like, yeah, great. It's going to be like an MCU X-Files. And even the first couple episodes, I'm like, all right, this could work. And it just didn't. So I'm even more excited for Werewolf by Night because of how let down I was by that. And because you can trust the people in charge. And to your point that, like, yeah, it's like what it's like done. And they made it in secret. I'm like, great. Do more of that.
2 weeks. Yeah. We're getting this in like 2-3 weeks. And you say, if you freeze frame right at the right point, you're gonna get the man thing in there,
and I have
chances are I looked at the man thing, I was like, they said it was in the trailer. Oh my god, there he is, this is awesome. and you're going to get maybe some vampires, you're gonna get the whole horror window right there that's been creaked open, and we still have a Blade movie coming, so who's to say Werewolf by Night doesn't end up being part of the larger story.
What if Man Thing introduces Artie and Leech, which leads to the introduction of the FF, which leads to the introduction of the Fantastic Four, because nobody seemed to know that Penn Badgley is currently in London shooting you right now, which is why he couldn't come to D23 to announce that he was going to be. Am I QAnon right now?
You're Marvel version of QAnon, and the whole idea that Penn Badgley is playing Reed. I think that's good casting. I think that's a fun rumor. Who knows?
I just don't remember anybody mentioning Artie. I mean, in the last 30 years.
Unabashedly love Artie and Leech. The FF is my favorite thing. The Future Foundation is my favorite thing about the Fantastic.
I mean, I still want a Power Pack movie. So, the 8-year-old in me demands a Power Pack movie. So I'd love Artie.
If that gives us a Dragon Man, then I'm super happy. Hmm.
Yeah.
If we get Dragon Man out of all that, then I'm
all
super
the weird
excited.
Little Lloyds. Yeah. That'd be great.
And I love when they had the alternate team and Mike Allred was doing that artwork recently. Like, I think that was a lot of fun. And I'm a big fan of Slott. Like Dan Slott's writing, I think he gets kind of smacked around a bit on his Fantastic Four and especially on his Spider-Man book before that. But he takes swings and he doesn't always feel the pressure to reset stuff.
Take swings.
I didn't.
Man, you're the big bucks, man.
Well, it was a baseball metaphor, so I didn't do that. Garrett, I love you, man. Put my tires back on. listen, dinner's in an hour, okay? Better be ready. No, I think it'll be fun. What I was going to with the Werewolf by Night thing is that, Garrett, you were talking about this isn't the MCU, this is the larger Disney parks. They're expanding Avengers Campus a lot. And in the artwork they released on the expansion of Avengers Campus, this artwork is pretty telling, especially with fans' fears that, like, there's not going to be any more Moon Knight in the MCU and stuff like that. But here we've got some artwork from Avengers Campus of King Thanos, which is an alternate version of Thanos. This is part of a ride where can you describe this, Garrett? It's an ride.
An e-ticket is what they describe it. Disney uses that. That's their big tickets. You know, back in the day when you use tickets, you'd get the e-ticket. So this is the Avengers Campus opened with their smaller ride. They haven't had their bigger ride yet. That's what this ride is going to be. Years ago, they were going to do like a Battle of Wakanda sort of thing, but they scrapped that. And so now it's kind of taken from the Donny Cates, Jeff Shaw, Thanos wins story where Thanos wins. And so basically, yeah, King Thanos is from a reality where the Avengers, where he whipped that booty and he won, to quote my last appearance when I talked about whipping booty. And so what I think is so cool about this is, so we don't know what kind of ride system it's going to have. We don't know if there's any animatronics, if it's screen based. Most likely many of the actors will reprise their roles they have been for the rides that are currently there. But if you look on the left, you see Hydra Smasher from What If in his animated form, and you see the Peter Parker from Spider-Man Freshman Year. And what I think is interesting is if they are making this ride is a big multiversal story, getting to see those two mediums interact, I think you can kind of do that a little bit easier in a ride where you aren't in the prism of like a live action film. And then suddenly, okay, we're an animated movie and then back to live action. Sure. I think it's interesting to see how they're going to play with that. Obviously, to steal a wrestling term, card subject to change. They could put they could throw Howard the Duck next to Daredevil. They could do anything. But I agree with you. I think it is very telling. All these characters are very strategically chosen. We have all the Captain Americas. We have Captain Carter. We have Daredevil, who they are really pushing now as someone that is important now they have him back. I think this is very interesting.
There's Man
for the
Thing.
Park side. Yeah.
And
yeah,
for the exactly, fans yeah. who were preemptively bemoaning like Moon Knight never coming back and Oscar Isaac and this and that, like Moon Knight's in this. Obviously, She-Hulk's a fan favorite at the moment. She's over there on the right of this. image. But yeah, just seeing Moon Knight and Man-Thing in this, I'm like, okay, they're going to be expanding on those things, I think, because these are very, very, these are like D-list characters that have kind of fallen in good graces of some of the fans. I think like seeing Man-Thing on this, I'm like, okay, they have a design for the future, the horror window of the Marvel Universe, that corner of the Marvel Universe. Who knows? Maybe we'll get, I don't know. I'm just kind of talking at this point. but up in the upper right corner.
Is Morbius?
Yeah,
that's where's my question. Morbius? That's a question on everyone's lips.
we do get two Hulks over there. We get traditional Hulk, and then we get Planet Hulk. And so there's they got plans, folks. They got plans.
Who's the very far right bottom corner? Oh, that's Miss Marvel's.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Inbigan. The Inbigan fist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So, all right. Any non-Marvel stuff that really
there's other things
you?
In Marvel?
No.
Ezra, well, not, Ezra no, Bridger, the good Ezra, the one on this side of the geek equation.
Tell us, Ashley, tell us.
I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I believe it's either Eastman or Amon. And he was announced as playing Ezra Bridger. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he's been in. But he looks like Ezra Bridger. So that's exciting to me. Jason very gratefully is pulling up his name so that I could.
I'm trying to look at his IMDb to see what else he's
been in. Esfandi is his last mm-hmm. name. Amon or Amon Esfandi. But he looks great. Like, he actually looks like the character, which is so exciting. My fangirl heart will like always be sad that it's not Raul Coley, but that's okay. He's gonna get his Star Wars due. It's okay. We will survive. But I'm just excited that we're getting him in live action and that he's a grown up.
Apparently he was in King Richard.
Oh, okay. If you say so.
That's what the internet database says.
Yeah.
I don't
mean
to entirely.
One night I was going to watch that and then something happened.
It's a good movie.
I don't entirely mean to pull us into Marvel. This is technically Indiana Jones 5 talk, but because he was there for Loki 2, we got this picture, which really is the best thing. That was the best thing on the internet.
I don't know what warmed my heart more, the like Lord of the Rings, like you bow down to no one, and then it's just Brendan Fraser, or this, like both made me misty. And, like, yes, like yay, all the people.
This is the best thing to come out of D23 2022, hands down. And it wasn't even one of their official announcements. And it's crazy to me that the actor that plays Short Round, that he was on stage for Loki. And then I think right before that was the Indiana Jones panel. And the fact that they didn't put both of these guys on the same on the stage at the same time, to me, Disney publicity missed opportunity there.
They were clipping through a lot of announcements and there was no time for love, Dr. Jones, I think is what went down there.
I mean, where's our Short Round Disney Plus series? I think everybody wants to see it.
Mm-hmm. I think that the answer is coming at 100%. It'll happen. Don't doubt it.
I hope that it was not announced because I hope he and his reps are holding out for all the money in the world based off of the star power that everyone has been ignoring for the last 4 decades. Like, I hope he takes them for all they're worth. I really do.
I think a D-plus Short Round series that retconned Crystal Skull, I think, would be incredible.
Yeah, because nobody's asking for that Mutt Williams Disney Plus show. Not even Shia LaBeouf is asking for that show.
But oddly, Olivia Wilde is asking for it. No, and I think anybody who does want to work for Disney, you can't try to hold them up for all the money you actually deserve. Otherwise, you will never work for Disney. So, we're talking about all the variants coming in.
Robert Downey Jr. sure did that for a lot of
He's the one, and then they learn their lesson. Because now with all the variants, it's like every contract is negotiable. You know, it's like there can be anybody can be any of these characters if they ask for too much money.
You know, I'm just happy that I watched the Willow trailer today and it seemed, I mean, obviously every actor, but Val Kilmer, sadly, is back. Maybe they find a way to bring him back. But I think, I mean, that my heart swelled at that Willow trailer because that was such a big movie for me as a kid. And seeing all even the little dudes, seeing Willow's best friend back in it, it was pretty awesome, and I'm excited about that. And we're getting that in late November, so we're getting so much. We're getting Wakanda Forever in November, we're getting this one. I mean, people who are complaining about like not getting in a phase 6 and phase 5, like, you're not going to have an open weekend before then. Like, it'll be on us before you know it. So Speaking of before we know it, we got our good friends, Ashley and Jason. They're going to dip, but we're going to wrap up soon, but they're going to dip. They're on another podcast. They double booked us, so I take that personally. I just kept their catalog.
I've never seen Willow, so I have nothing to contribute.
That's right. Since I kept made a copy of The Key to Your House while I was watching your cat this weekend, let's do a weekend and let's watch Willow.
You can come over when you're done this podcast.
I'll rewatch Willow if we get to rewatch Howard Saint's Star Turn of The Punisher.
Heck, I guess, yeah. Willow's off the calendar. Meat is not on the menu for that one, boys.
It has been lovely. It was so great to have you all here at J23.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Sorry that honored to be sorry here. That our publicist is garbage and can't do schedules. Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is racism in America. I think this is the last big subject we need to talk about, but holy crap. We thought we were ready for this, considering we'd seen the treatment of, you know, minorities in every Star Wars project up to this point, in multiple fantasy projects like Lord of the Rings, and in, you know, Game of Thrones. But no, we got the Little Mermaid, and people went nuts. I think we all kind of had the same reaction, right?
I went nuts for the opposite reason, because she's freaking amazing, and like, this looks incredible, and I'm loving the different things in the effects that they're doing to mimic a water underwater effect. Her hair looks incredible, like the CG animation is insane.
Her tail looks watching,
it's like, I mean, a fish.
It's like a fish. It's not like someone whose knees are somewhere in that tail. Mm-mm. Wearing it. It's fluid. It's awesome. Geekscapists, I know that we probably have live action Disney burnout. They did announce like a Lion King prequel, you know, in live action and all this stuff. But you at least have to pay attention to some of these things that Disney's putting out. And this live action Little Mermaid, Heidi almost, I mean, I think she teared up watching this because she loves the Little Mermaid, and this version of it looks great.
Yeah. You know? It looks beautiful. And of course, everyone's a twat on the internet. Just putting that out there.
Well, I did appreciate sort of the, you know, to counteract that, you did have a lot of the reaction videos of, yeah, you know, kids reacting to it, and, you know, kids of, you know, various ethnicities just like, oh my gosh, that's Ariel, and you can just see it in their eyes. I mean, they don't say anything. That's how you know it's not staged. You just see how excited they are. And yeah, look, I think it's great. And, you know, we were talking about sort of the representation earlier, and that's not just Marvel, it's not just Star Wars, it's just Disney-wide. And I think that it's great. On the one hand, you know, I've mentioned this before, but when I saw Shang-Chi with my wife, who's Chinese-American, she was like, I love this, but she was sad because she's like, because I didn't have this when I was a kid. And aww. So then you think about all the kids who have all these characters, you know, like, everybody in Star Wars looked like me when I was a kid. I felt represented, yeah, fully represented, you know? And then Lando was there in the second one. I'm like, right. Yeah, they really didn't do a good job. And I think that it's great to see that they do it. And look, the cynic in me is like, well, yeah, because Disney is selling all this product all around the world, and people all around the world look like people all around the world. So it only helps from a business standpoint. And the aforementioned twats on Twitter, they're so loud.
Twitter
twats.
They
feel talk. Like there's a lot of them. But then when you talk casually to people, they're like, oh, wait, people are upset about about
right.
this or that. You know, so it's like, it's just those of us who unfortunately feel the need to be on that app that feel like it's more prevalent than maybe it is. Yeah. You know?
There's some, I heard a term last week, rage farming, where people want to get followers. They get followers, they get a lot of attention by just like, you know, biting their fist and rage farming and be like, can you believe they done this? And it's like, and like you said, it's magnified more than it's in reality. And then I heard somebody actually analyze the Trump conventions, the Trump caravan, and it is very much a caravan. And somebody said, you know what, these aren't people in multiple states going to support Trump. This is like the Grateful Dead tour. And these are all the same people following him around. It's not like he has a big fan base in Pennsylvania and a big fan base in the Dakotas or a big fan base in Florida. They're the same people for the most part. The majority of them are just following him around. and they're just on tour with the Grateful Dead, but it's a racist version of the Grateful Dead. So I think you're right. They're not a lot of people, but their outrage is louder because of the echo effect of the internet. It's sad, but I think this movie is going to come out, and if it's good or bad, we won't know. But it is cool that, you know, people see themselves represented. And isn't it taking place in the Caribbean? Like, people in the Caribbean, they're not necessarily white, really, are they?
What?
Yeah. No, they're not.
Garrett's eyes are open. It goes back to the Madonna like a prayer video.
Go touch some grass.
Jesus looked like, you know, what Jesus would have looked like,
yes,
considering like where he was born and where he lived, you know.
And Christian, you and I are old enough to remember that like a prayer video and the outrage it created, because it was, you know, it was a interracial like love affair, but also it was with Jesus. But yeah, Jesus was black in that video, and people lost their shit. You look back, and that is a classic 80s video. We're gonna put that in with the education of Garrett on 80s materials that we talked about earlier today. Garrett, Christian, and I have a chat, which is basically the education or corruption culturally.
I yelled at
Garrett, or I'm like, well, Garrett, how could you not have seen that? Well, maybe because I'm born two decades after either of you. But we'll get you up to speed on some of the worst things that the 80s and 90s had to offer, Garrett. That's what Geekscape is for. That is what Geekscape is for.
Speaking of the, just real quick before we wrap it all up, last thing, we got the Hocus Pocus 2 trailer finally, and I'm so freaking stoked because the main leads are African American, as far as I know, and we're bringing back the witches that we know and love, and we're bringing back, of course, Doug freaking Jones.
Yes. That's the part I'm excited about. I love Doug Jones.
I love him. I've never met the man, but he seems like the nicest person in the world. I know.
He's a fantastic character on Star Trek Discovery that when that show premiered, I disliked that character so much and he won me over. And that doesn't usually happen. He's great. And then just my final thing was buried in all the news. And Katie knows where I'm going because this was on the email thread. Was the 30th anniversary edition of Muppet Christmas Carol that we're going to get on Disney Plus in time for Christmas, where it will restore the actual theatrical version of the movie, which had the song The Love Is Gone, which when you cut it out, it slowed the movie down, but the story actually stopped making sense for a moment.
And Natalie loves that song.
She was just kind of a bitch. She just like was like, no, you need to not be into money or something. It was like very odd. And then when you get that song, it just fills in those gaps. And it's such a beautiful song.
I feel that way, but my wife hates that song. And she was so glad it was taken out.
I hadn't heard of it until Matt Kelly mentioned it to me. And
woke you up in the middle of the night. London.
Yeah. London. Wait, how did you not know about
it? He sang it to you.
The thing is, that is one of Heidi's favorite movies. I think she and Katie are very much alike in that way.
Yeah.
They got to watch it every year. And I think as a kid, Heidi had the clamshell version of that movie, which included that song.
Yes.
And she says every version's she said every version's inferior to it. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not that familiar with it. And then Matt Kelly, you know, he reached for the vapors and was like, how do you not know that song? And he told me all about it because he is the ultimate Muppets head. And so I educated myself. I did the right thing. I educated myself. I think that's going to be huge. That is going to be, I mean, Disney's really smart in that way. They're like, okay, let's just make this an annual institution and put it on Disney Plus, and people are just going to kick those ratings up every year.
And the best Scrooge I've ever seen is Michael Caine.
Michael
in that
Caine.
Movie. Because he's playing Scrooge 100% straight. There's Muppets all around him, but he's not hamming it up. Pun intended for Miss Piggy. That's why the movie works as well as it does. And that song's very important. So take that, Heather. That's my wife.
Well, I think ultimately there's more news than we think about. Those are just the ones that I think we all felt passionately about. The one thing that was absent that I was kind of like shocked by, because it's one of their biggest things, is we're going to get a Guardians of the Galaxy 3 in May, and it was not present at all in the Marvel panel. But maybe that's just a testament to the confidence of Marvel saying, hey, like, those are really well-known characters. That is our strongest franchise after Wakanda Forever that we're putting out this year. It's going to make the most money after Wakanda Forever. we don't really need to push it, but let's try and familiarize fans with some of these other characters and these other things that we're putting out. What do you think about them not having Guardians 3 present?
Well, they haven't even talked about the holiday special that's coming out this December, the Guardians holiday special. They have been mums the word on it. Only James Gunn has been talking about it.
That's one that we just keep forgetting about. It's not in any of their phase talk. They haven't talked about it. I know nothing about it. I also thought it was animated because it was so not talked about. It's a live action one, Garrett.
Yeah, they shot it at the same time as Volume 3. They were shooting them concurrently.
I had no idea, to be honest.
That's insane.
The one thing I did agree with on Twitter was you can't have all these stories about this trailer made everybody cry when they saw it, which is what you heard about the Guardians 3 trailer. So you can't have those stories and then not show us the damn trailer. And so that was I was like, all right, they're waiting for D23. And that's when I was like, I've been waiting for that. And nobody filmed that trailer in Comic-Con. So I was like, I don't want any of this stuff. I'd trade it all. I'd even trade him up at Christmas Carol. I'm sorry, Katie. If I could have gotten the Guardians 3 trailer that apparently made everybody cry.
Okay. Like,
I want to know why.
You're just going to be patient, Criss-Cross. Yeah, like, that's true. I don't want you turning into this kid on Twitter who's like, worst panel ever. There was a lot of that going on this weekend.
Just be to me and don't watch trailers and you'll never be disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Didn't hear that from us, Geekscape.
But they're also probably like 12 years old, and that is their first panel, so it is the worst panel that they've ever seen.
I was allowed to watch the panels on my own for the first time this year, and that was the worst panel I've ever seen.
Worst.
That was the worst. Geekscape, we try not to complain about too many things here on the show. We're just surprised by them sometimes. I'm looking forward to all of this. I just can't believe we're getting the barrage of content that we're getting.
Cool.
I get to watch a Ring of Power show every freaking weekend. And then immediately thereupon, 48 hours later, there's a Game of Thrones. And both of those shows have been great. And I get a new Monkey Island game in a week on Talk Like a Pirate Day. And y'all know that we're getting all this content because I can't stop putting out, like, people are asking to come on Geekscape and I can't even, I'm just telling them like, hey, mid-November, I can't. Stuff is either pre-recorded or scheduled by then. And it's because there's too much stuff to talk about. And so I thank all three of you and Jason and Ashley for joining me on this thing and helping me at least like put some context to what the heck all that D23 sound was. Where can people find y'all on the social medias? Let's start with Katie.
Hey, you can always find me at El Sassy Pants, ELSASSYPANTS, sometimes with a Z at the end.
And can I just say real quick that Katie did one of my favorite episodes of Geekscape Games. If y'all don't listen to Geekscape Games, she talked about a game that I wanted to play but wasn't getting around to quite yet because there's a Monkey Island game coming out next week. Oh, and I'm also getting married next month. But yeah, well, that's only one day. You don't have to schedule around that.
I bet that's not on your mind at all.
No, not on my mind. Not keeping me away. Not keeping me up for 27 hours straight at all, ever, like on Saturday night. Stray looks phenomenal, and y'all went deep into it, and it's still a very much a mystery to me, even though you talked a lot about it. I can't wait to play it. You did the biggest job on selling me on that. It was a phenomenal episode of Geekscape Games, Katie. You and Logan did great. Geekscapists, you should be listening to that show, especially when Katie hosts it. Thanks for doing that.
Absolutely.
Speaking of hosts, we got ourselves Christian over here in the corner who hosted a Geekscape book club on The Mighty Thor. How'd that go, buddy?
It was a great conversation about The Mighty Thor. I still have it right here next to me because we did it just last night. And I hadn't read that Jason Aaron run, and it was great. It was interesting because they clearly incorporated Loki, movie Loki. There's a bunch of other Lokis, but you're like, oh yeah, they're like, yeah, we're gonna go full Hiddleston because that came out in 2015. So I thought that getting that story from Jane Foster's point of view is something that they would never have done with the Thor movie. So I think that I think it's very accessible for people who have not read a lot of Thor comics. I read a lot of Thor comics, but I hadn't read that era. So I appreciated it. And you can find that anywhere on Geekscape. There's a video version and also an audio version, assuming that Matt has posted the audio version, but I don't have that confirmation just yet.
The video version should be up on this YouTube channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, it should be up. And subscribe to the Geekscape Book Club if you haven't, to get all those discussions once a month about various books that you should be reading. And I'm
next month we're doing Sandman, because that's also inexcusably, I also haven't read that. So.
Okay. Christian, I brought you here for your expertise.
That's the whole reason I do that show.
You don't have like the first comic Garrett I ever does. Like Garrett has the excuse of having been born 10 years ago. You do not have that excuse, my friend. When you started saying you didn't read the Jane Foster Thor, I said it must have been sexism. I don't know why he wouldn't have read that.
No, that was sexism. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
But
can't confirm.
But Sandman was just because that was a, you know, that was an adult comic and I wasn't allowed to buy those.
Wow.
You know?
It's pretty incredible. And I love what they did on the Netflix series.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the Netflix show. Yeah.
It's fantastic. And the book is fantastic. And wow, the things that we are going to get in the next season or two of Sandman. It's going to be awesome. Garrett, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Garrett Briones or on Twitter at Garrett S. Briones. I am cooking up something with Matt Kelly for Geekscape. We're working on that. Hopefully working on some other things and maybe directing some things for a friend of mine. So we're gonna see about that. But you know, you'll find me places. I'm always behind London's apartment, just grounding through the trash. Well,
just come in. I will give you the trash before it becomes trash. We can read comics. You can have some comics.
You can read Sandman to me because I've also have never read Sandman.
But
I read Jane Foster Thor, so I'm not a sexist. I'm okay. So I read the whole run. I own it. It's in the other room. I can prove it.
So I went and rebought Sandman a couple of years ago. I know the date. It was 2015. It was 2016. And I took a lot of the Sandmans with me on a train to visit my mother in New Mexico. And I finished reading them upon that trip. And I shipped them back to myself in LA. And somebody got into the box in shipping and stole all my Sandmans that I had rebought myself. It's heartbreaking because that is definitely a book I want to reacquire and read again, because I think every 5 years when you read it, it actually says something different every time. And that's just how good it is. And I think that's, I think about it. I'm like, oh, this is about the time I should be rereading Sandman. I'll just reach over to my shelf and it's not there because someone stole it out of the mail. It's a pretty heartbreaking story. I just didn't want to care. I was going from New Mexico to New York to Connecticut, back to New York, to LA. So when I was in New Mexico, I just mailed it to myself so I wouldn't have to take it to the East Coast. And I should have just carried the damn things. It's very heartbreaking when I think about Sandman. Speaking of heartbreaking, as a filmmaker, Garrett, we had a great time at the film festival this past weekend. El Rey, produced by Geekscape, was playing. And I found out today I got nominated for an award. They didn't tell me, so I didn't go to the award show. Film festivals, if you're going to bring shirts in and give them awards or nominate them even, and you want to sell tickets to the awards gala, it helps to let the filmmakers know they're up for something. You would have gotten $25 out of me. But it's too late now. I'm headed to Texas this week for another film festival that will hopefully tell me if they nominate our film for an award. So that happened, and I was like, that's some Geekscape news. It's pretty funny. But ooh. I think I don't know how many festivals we're going to be left in, so I'll put that up on the YouTube channel when it's done with its festival run. You'll get a brand new Geekscape short film. As for Geekscape, I'll be back a little later this week with a pre-recorded conversation with the president of LA Comic Con. I think I promised it 2 weeks ago, but then we started getting directors that I really wanted to talk to, and they kind of bumped it. But we have cool plans for LA Comic Con. We're talking to them about different panels we can host. I would love to see all three of the people still remaining on this episode to be hosts or on those panels.
Those other two losers who ducked out.
I would love Jason and Ashley always have a place here or any of the panels. But yeah, if you want to learn a lot more about LA Comic Con, that episode's coming up later on the feed. Please subscribe to the audio feed. It won't be live or in any of these video formats. But it's cool. You don't have to necessarily be in LA to, you know, partake in any LA Comic Con stuff. They've got online presences and a lot of cool stuff going on. And I'm looking forward to this year because it's like our hometown con, and it's like getting the gang back together and just doing our thing. Other than that, I've got some more plans. I've asked a few people on the podcast, and I hope they come through, but I'll be in Texas, so we'll find out if I can even record. Love y'all. If you enjoyed this Geekscape, share with your friends. Hit that share button. Thank you for the increased numbers after the Joe Dante episode. I loved that. And let's keep it going. Just keep writing reviews, keep sharing with your friends, and keep like subscribing to us on all the socials. Till then, we'll see y'all maybe next week. Geekscape forever. Don't hate, create, and all of that. All right, Garrett, I'm hungry. Go make me my dinner. He's my ward. Like,
that's what we got a butler for.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Don't get yourself killed on those rooftop jumps this time, okay, Garrett?
Okay.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.